This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
What is your most outlandish travel dream? I'm talking about the thing you would do if money was unlimited, if you could go anywhere, do anything in the world. What would you do? It's a tough question. I'll share my thoughts in just a moment. Plus, I've got an amazing interview for you today. It's part of the Inspiring Female Adventurers series. Strap in. You're not going to want to miss it. Thank you so very much for being here. And welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey there, it's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend, and thank you so very much for sharing this time here with me today. You know what this show is about if you've listened before. If not, I'm going to tell you right now, this is the show to help you travel the world on your terms. Long-term travel, it's a Swiss army knife, if you will, of travel tactics and strategies, inspiration and advice to help you roam the planet for however long you want and fill your life with as much travel as you desire. And incorporating your current interests, that's important too, because as you grow, as you change, as you get older in different stages of life, your interests change as well. And how you want to travel might change. What you want to incorporate in your travels changes. It's all very fluid. So that's why I'm sharing all of these different ways that you can do it. So you can pick and choose. You can pull out that multi-tool and take whichever one suits you right now. And I know you love travel. You're passionate about it. I am as well. And I just want to say you're not alone, because you're joining tens of thousands of listeners worldwide. And this is a community powered show. So anytime you want to check in, say hello, share your story, let me know what you think of the podcast, make any suggestions for guests, future show topics, anything. You got any questions? You can hit me up. Jason@zerototravel.com is my email address. And feel free to get in touch. I got to give a few quick shout outs to some people who have been reaching out to me via email. Jacob, congratulations to you. Jacob just finished walking 100 kilometers around Tokyo and made a pretty sweet video about it. Gave a good look of Tokyo on the ground. And I put that up on the Zero to Travel Facebook page. So you can check that out if you want. Jacob, congrats on that. David wrote me with a long-term travel camera question. He was asking, should he bring his big camera on his next trip? And you know what? I think it's a great question, and I'm going to answer that in a future episode. In the not so distant future, I'm going to be publishing an episode with listener questions, and I have plenty of those. I've been keeping track of all of them as they come through, and of course, I still write you back, but some of them I put on the podcast because I think they're universal. Got some more listener questions episodes coming your way. And Serena took a little bit of time to write and just said she loved the podcast, so I want to say thank you to her for checking in. And my friend, if you want to check in again, please reach out anytime. Would love to hear from you. Let's get into this idea I posed at the top of the show. What is your most outlandish travel dream? And the reason why I introduced the show with that question today is because my guest is a very inspiring adventurer, and it is part of the Inspiring Female Adventurers series. And I think this is an important series because there are so many of the ladies and the women out there doing incredible things, and I just want to give them a platform to share their stories, their perspectives. And today's guest is an incredible endurance athlete, to say the least. And she's going to talk about her experience climbing Mount Everest. You know, how does she feel about the Everest experience? She's going to talk about how to balance risk in more extreme types of situations and adventures like this. And I asked her if endurance athletes are born or can they be made? And she gives her take on that and just so much more. You're going to dig it, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. Most outlandish travel dream. You know, I think Everest or something like that is one of those things where you say, okay, I want to climb the seven summits or I want to climb Mount Everest. And we all know, if you've done any reading on Everest, it's so expensive and, you know, it's hard to get to and there's all of these different challenges involved. And that might be deemed an outlandish, quote, outlandish travel dream because it just seems so logistically hard to do and physically hard to do. I don't know what yours is. I'd really love to hear what your most outlandish travel dream is because this is a fascinating question to me. And I think one of the most important things I've learned personally from hosting this podcast is that I don't think there is such a thing as an outlandish travel dream anymore. If you talk to my past self, my younger self, before I did a lot of traveling, before hosting the show even, I would have said that a lot of the bigger types of ideas, not that I'm a pessimist, but maybe that they seemed way out of reach or that would be a ridiculous notion. Now, having the privilege of hosting this show, and if you've been listening to it, so many guests with just incredible stories, done amazing things, and it's all about just, you know, kind of setting the intention and going for it and taking the steps to do it. And I've come to realize that I don't think there's such a thing as an outlandish travel dream or a crazy idea in travel or life. Because I've talked to so many people and you've been listening, you've heard these stories, you've heard what people have done. I mean, talk to a blind couple that rode a tandem bike through South America and all the way up to Alaska. Polly Latovsky, the only woman to walk around the world. She was in the first episode of this Inspiring Female Adventurer series. Just so many people and realizing that, hey, they just took the steps to do it. This is so empowering because it really means that we can do anything we really put our minds to and we really set our intentions to do. I firmly believe that. So if I had a crazy travel dream, I don't really think it's crazy anymore. So I'll tell you a couple things I do want to do because I think they're going to be interesting experiences and they're things that I haven't done yet. And there are things I will do in the future eventually, and I just don't think I can accommodate it in my life right now. You know, I just moved to Norway and going through immigration here and trying to get settled here for a bit with my wife, and it's like a different time. But I know in the future, I want to do a longer bike tour through multiple countries, and one day I'd also like to walk across a country, whether that's north, south, or east, west. I love to walk, and the idea of walking from one border to another is fascinating to me. Way back in the archives on Zero to Travel, I did an interview with Nate Dom. He walked across America, wrote a great book about it, and I think it's like episode, I don't know, it's somewhere in the first handful of episodes, but if you go to zerototravel.com, you can search for Nate Dom, D-A-M-M, and you can hear his experience walking across America. So just thought I'd share those personal travel dreams with you. And the cool thing is, I see that they're totally possible. I realize I can't do it right now, but I'm no longer intimidated by that idea after this experience hosting the podcast and also hearing from so many of you getting in touch and letting me know what you're up to. I mean, I just got an email from a guy, Paul, who's bike through Europe, and now he's down in South America doing it. He actually invited me to join him. And Paul, thanks for listening to the show. I wish I could make it to South America right now. But like I said, I'm here in Norway and got some paperwork processing and everything like that. So I'm actually not allowed to leave Norway right now. But I do appreciate the invite. And, you know, I'm the type of guy I would take you up on it. I will just show up like that. You all are doing awesome things. I know there are so many people in this community doing incredible things. The guests that come on, they have stories to share. There's just a lot of good stuff going on. And it's all within the realm of possibility if you just open up your mind to it. I truly believe that. So, and by the way, this idea is not meant to diminish anything that any of my guests have done, including today's guest who has had some spectacular athletic accomplishments. And I'm not saying that anybody can do this. I'm not suggesting that anybody can climb Everest or do some of the things that my guest today has done and many others I've spoken with who have accomplished big things. I'm only suggesting that it's okay to dream it. It's okay to take the steps and go for it. Doesn't mean you will succeed. It doesn't mean that you will be able to do it physically or mentally, or maybe you will. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that it's cool to embrace your dreams, and if they're big, that's okay. It doesn't have to seem like such, even though it will seem like sort of everybody gets big ideas and it seems so crazy and so far off. But if you put it through this context of, hey, okay, this is the thing. Let me see what steps I would need to take to actually make this a reality. That's the one thing that has pervaded this podcast after talking to many, many guests and just learning that, hey, it's just, you know, taking these steps and taking the actions and doing it. Again, that's no guarantee for success or failure. It's just the idea that dream big and anything is possible. That's empowering. There are my thoughts. Now, before we get into today's interview, if you haven't signed up for the email list over at zerototravel.com, I share a lot of content there that I don't publish here on the podcast. Can't put everything on the podcast, so send out some personal stories via email, some unpublished audio, got some videos. I just finished a video today I'll be sharing with that newsletter, and building a full toolkit with all of the free tools and some of the mini audio courses I have, so you can access all of those when you sign up. So just sign up over there, zerototravel.com. Thanks for your time. Now, please enjoy this interview, and I will see you on the other side. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with the first American woman to summit Everest from both sides, North and South. She's also the first American woman to climb what is referred to as the Himalayan Triple Crown. She was named Colorado Woman of the Year in 2002 and has climbed every 14,000 plus peak in Colorado. There are 53 of them. She is a coach for endurance athletes, an accomplished adventure racer, Nordic skier, mountain runner, among many other things, the founder of the Climb for Literacy. We're going to talk about that today, and I'm excited to learn more from her and honored to have her here today. Ellen Miller, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor for me to be here.
Well, I got pretty lucky to meet you because I was up in the Vail area recently to check out the fall foliage and visiting my buddy Joe. And we were having breakfast and you were sitting behind me with your friend. And Joe said, oh, do you know who that was? And he's talked about you, actually, because I know you do some training at the club he works at. He said that that's the first American woman to climb Everest from both sides, at which point I jumped out of my chair and chased you down before you left to get this interview. So we have actually met in person, but we're doing this over Skype. But I just want to say thanks again for taking the time.
Sure. Thank you, Jason.
Sure. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, I guess, your personal story growing up, because I don't know, you've done some pretty extreme adventures, and I'm wondering if that's something that you were raised around, or if that's something you kind of curated on your own through reading and kind of exploring through your own interests.
I grew up in a pretty athletic family. Both of my parents were athletes, and both of my parents really valued time outdoors. So as a younger child, I guess I was exposed to things like camping very early on, and rock climbing, and outdoor sports. So I think that my love for the outdoors kind of blossomed at a very early age because my mother was always telling me, go outside and play, go outside and play. So I can credit them, I think, for my passion for mountain climbing. You know, I grew up in Asheville, North Carolina, which is a hip and fabulous place now. But when I grew up there, you know, 56 years ago, it wasn't so hip and fabulous. It was kind of out in the middle of nowhere. So yeah, I've been lucky to be surrounded by inspiring and active and outdoorsy people. In the sixth grade, I had a science teacher who took us rock climbing and camping a lot. And that really absolutely supported my interest in climbing bigger mountains.
Yeah, was that first experience the little spark? I feel like some of these bigger dreams come with a little spark at some point during childhood. Is that something that you could point to as being a definitive sort of, hey, this is something I'd like to do a little more than just occasionally?
It really was. It really was. And it's been, I think, one of the most poignant moments in my life is recently, interestingly, I had the opportunity to go back to that science teacher.
And oh, really?
He's quite elderly now, but I went back to Asheville. I sought him out and I told him just how much he had influenced my life. And of course, kind of blew his mind with how far I was able to take that spark. So if you've ever been inspired by a teacher or a coach or someone, and you do find that it plays into the bigger picture of life, don't forget to go back and thank them, because it really makes their day when you reconnect like that. So,
yeah, I mean, it can make your life, I would imagine, like thinking, you know, you'd never know what kind of impact you're making as a teacher or a coach. You know, it's very rare, I think, that you get actual ROI or, you know, yes, or whatever you want to call it, if you're going to use a business term, but that you actually get feedback from somebody, you know, these many years later. So this teacher's mind must have been pretty blown.
It's really blown. I told him, I said, well, Steve, I've been mentioning your name and, you know, these Everest presentations I've been doing for years. And you know, you could see the look of horror on. He said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, oh, no, I absolutely give credit where credit is due. So he chuckled.
That's so great. And that's a fun moment for you getting to come and have a surprise like that, I suppose, in your back pocket. Have you gotten that in return? I mean, you've coached a lot of people. You've been around a lot of people. Have you had people come back to you years later and shared some of these similar stories with you?
I have, Jason. The Climb for Literacy Children, you know, maybe 10 years doesn't seem like that long in some ways, but when I first started seeing some of these kids climb as 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, and now they're back as high schoolers or college kids, and they come back to work for the Climb for Literacy or to belay the little kids when they're climbing, And they tell me, they say, you know, Ellen, this event really made a difference in my life. It's really made me think about how I can use my passions to help other people and serve less fortunate people. So that gives me a big charge, you know, when I hear that. So
it's so great that you've taken all of these accomplishments that you've done and been able to leverage them to, you know, make a difference for the things that matter to you and provide that experience for others that your teacher provided you early on. And, you know, this is the way of the world, the beautiful way of the world, when people put out goodness. And I feel like this is what keeps the good cycle going, right?
It really is. And I know I'm going to sound like an old codger here when I say this, but, you know, I think the older you get, you realize, you know, you've kind of taken and taken and taken, whether it's travel or adventure or experiences, and you realize you reach a point where you think, okay, it's time to pay it forward. It's time to give it back. It's time to help elevate other people. And it was very clear to me. And for many of my climbing friends, honestly, you know, we've had our kind of our heyday in the Himalaya. And I look at some of the very powerful work that these climbers are doing, whether it's for the environment, whether it's for kids, whether it's for Alzheimer's or whatever their cause is, you know, they've really started to give that energy back. So it's a lovely cycle.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions. Towing capacity varies by configuration. See Nissan Towing Guide and Owner's Manual for additional information. Always secure cargo. Now, back to the show.
On the mountain, you know, it's not very often I get to talk to somebody that's climbed Mount Everest, let alone from both sides, and the first American woman to do so. So this is truly is an honor. I read that you did one of these climbs, or maybe both of them, after hip replacement surgery. Is that correct?
Well, I climbed Everest before the hip replacements.
Okay.
But I blew out my hips from all this running and activity, and I got my new hips, and I climbed 2 8,000-meter peaks after the hips. Lhotse, which is the fourth highest mountain in the world, and Manaslu, which is the eighth highest mountain in the world. So
I did a trekking trip through the Manaslu region.
Oh, cool.
Last year. Yeah, it's so beautiful. And
it's incredible.
That mountain is intimidating, and I was looking at it as like, how do people get up there? And now I'm talking to somebody who's actually been to the top. It's really incredible. Focusing on Mount Everest, you know, when did your, I guess, fascination with that mountain start to be born inside? Was it something you read, or, you know, and when did you actually start taking logistical steps to begin the process of saying, hey, I can actually make this a reality?
Well, I'm one of the kind of the old-fashioned climbers. It took me years and years and years. It took me 20 years from the time I really started mountaineering to get to Mount Everest. And these days, unfortunately, people just say, oh, I want to go climb Mount Everest. And they think they can do that within the span of a year. And it's really tough. I started out climbing mountains. Well, gosh, I started out with the Colorado 14ers and Mexico and South America and Alaska, and really got about 20 years, 15 to 20 years of experience before I ever went to the Himalaya. I climbed an 8,000-meter peak before I went to Everest. And I encourage people to really invest the time in that and getting that experience before they do go to Everest or even to go climb an 8,000-meter peak, because it makes the experience much more enjoyable. You know, when you have rope skills and you have climbing skills and you understand your gear thoroughly and you work well with your teammates, it just tends to make the big climbs more fun. If people head off to these big peaks without enough experience, they're gripped, you know, they're fearful for their lives. They, you know, it's, they may or may not succeed, but it's definitely a different kind of experience.
I'm sure you also come to the mountain with a level of confidence that you wouldn't have if you didn't have all the back-end experience. There are so many stories around Mount Everest and, you know, you've experienced from the ground. And I heard in a recent interview, John Krakauer, who's obviously a famous author and climber who wrote Into Thin Air, which is there's a movie out about that right now. He said, quote, climbing Mount Everest was the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. I'd wish I'd never gone. Certainly, I think there are underplayed things that it might be involved where you can look at it through the rose-tinted glasses, I suppose, and you could also look at it in the other way where, you know, you might be seeing bodies along the way and different things like that. Can you share a little bit of what it was like to, I guess, sort of have the dream and then begin tackling it and maybe come across some of these things that might be a little bit of the darker elements or more challenging elements of the climb?
I think for me, you know, I can honestly say that climbing Mount Everest has given me the best days of my life. I certainly understand where Mr. Krakauer is coming from, because what has happened in his life since he was on Everest and wrote about it has been very impactful in his situation. And I really respect that. But for me, it was a dream come true. And it was a lot of hard work. It was a huge time and energy and money investment. I can honestly say that that mountain and its sister mountains that are right with it, Lhotse and Nüpse, which I've also climbed, that amphitheater has by far given me the best days and best times of my life, some of the deepest friendships that I'll probably ever experience. And I think when you are so focused on one dream for so long, you know, and you actually focus on every moment leading up to that summit, it's magical. And you just feel like it's a big blessing. I remember my last few steps, you know, before the summit, I remember thinking to myself, this is a culmination of every one of those times I climbed a different peak, or every one of those trail runs, or every time I had a ice climbing session or a gym session. It was a culmination of everything I had invested over 5 years. And so it was particularly meaningful. I did see dead bodies. One of them was that of an American woman who had made an attempt on the north side of Everest. And that was very poignant, and that stopped me in my tracks. And I've lost too many friends in the Himalayas. I have friends that have lost too many body parts there. You know, it does stop you, Jason, and it begs questions of us. You know, why do I continue to do this? Why? What is fueling my desire to do this when I know that other friends have lost their lives? So it's, you know, kind of finding that balance.
How do you mentally prepare? I know we're going to talk about athletics and training here in a little bit. That's something you're an expert on. So I did want to get some tips from you around fitness for travelers, which is something a lot of people struggle with. But how do you mentally prepare for a climb like this, for some of the aforementioned things, you know, losing limbs and some of these bigger risks that, you know, you don't want to focus too much on? How do you balance the reality of that versus just kind of pushing forward and saying, okay, there's a job I need to do, and this is part of the risk?
I think mental toughness comes with experience. And I think as I've gotten older, I realize there's a big difference between a reaction and a response. And typically the difference is, take a little bit of time before you react. You know, Viktor Frankl, which is one of the greatest sports psychologists, psychiatrists of all time, said, in between the stimulus and the response, there is a space. You know, within that space lies your power. And so what he's talking about is, if you get the email, if you receive the email that kind of irritates you and pisses you off, rather than sitting down and firing back another nasty email to that person, take the space. You know, the space can be 2 minutes. It can be 2 hours. Hell, it can be 2 weeks, you know. but take the space to really think about how you want to respond to that situation that is either scaring you or aggravating you or, you know, irritating you. And I found that in climbing, it's the same way. Oftentimes we don't have the space, and like if there's a rock fall or avalanche, obviously we have to make a decision and move quickly. But I think a lot of times mental toughness is just the ability to look at a situation, step back, analyze it, and say, okay, how am I going to respond to this? Do I retreat or do I carry on? And that has served me very well with mental toughness.
I love what you just shared. And I think space is an underutilized tactic in anything in life, right? I mean, I do find in my personal life, you know, and I get this a lot when I'm hiking, and I don't do the extreme mountain climbing that you do, Ellen, but, you know, even just on a longer hike, I mean, you have space to think. And I find that the more space you give yourself, the more things seem to flood in, and the right things, whether they're ideas or inspiration. It's a strange sort of thing when you think about it, because when you're really focusing, a lot of times those things wouldn't come, and we feel like we got to be productive a lot. Meanwhile, it's the long walks and the space that actually generate the most value, I think, in many ways. So, you know, I know there's somebody listening that's got Everest on the brain. you know, in this day and age,
go do it.
You're voting yes. I mean, if in this day and age, you know, what would be your advice to somebody that wants to climb it, you know, practically speaking? And, you know, I know there are a lot of costs involved, but then those can be offset with sponsorship, and we can go into the whole training thing, and that's a whole other thing. But just getting started, just taking that first step, if you will, what would be your advice to somebody?
Make the commitment. If you want to climb Everest, get serious and make the commitment and realize it's not going to be a quick and easy process, but write the dream down, start doing your research, start doing your homework, start talking to other climbers, get your gear ready, get your body in top form, do the hard training, get your butt up on those mountains on the windy and cold days. Go ice climbing, you know, really do the homework. So look, set yourself up to succeed. You're going to invest a lot of time and money in this. It cannot be a half-assed effort. You know, I always tell my athletes, a half-assed effort yields half-assed results. And you don't want to be going to Everest and not getting to the summit. It's just too expensive. So really, you know, look into whether you're being guided or an operator whose trip you want to be on or friends that you want to climb with. I mean, really take it seriously. In other words, give the mountain the respect and the reverence that it deserves. Everest doesn't want to be climbed quickly and easily and with disrespect. It's interesting, Jason. Sometimes some of us sense that mountain has its own energy. And boy, the mountain kind of lays us bare. And the Sherpa people, who of course live in Tibet and in the Khumbu region of Mount Everest, have so much respect for the mountain. It's a very sacred place for them. It's the home of the gods, right? And so I encourage any Westerner that dreams of going there, take that into account and try and respect the ritual that is around. It's Tibetan Buddhism is the way of life there, but take that seriously, because I've seen a lot of Westerners go there with kind of an arrogance, maybe more of a Western mentality of, I'm going to conquer the mountain, you know?
Mm. Yeah. It's a lot of type A personalities that are climbing Mount Everest. Yeah. Let's face it. So
yeah. And things can go wrong very quickly. And when things go wrong that high, it can be very, very, it can be lethal. So
how would you describe the energy of the mountain?
For me, whenever I've been around Everest, whether it was for Everest, Lhotse, Noopse, whatever, I kind of put myself in the headspace of, this is the home of the gods. This is, you know, my friends that are Sherpas, this is the home of their mountain gods. So I go there with a deep sense of reverence and kind of tune out the media and the circus and all of the, you know, kind of that bravado of all of these climbers that are going there to prove something. I kind of really get into my own headspace and hang out with the Sherpas a lot, honestly. One of my climbing partners, Nima Sherpa, you know, I would rather sit by the burning juniper and listen to him chant than I would be interviewed by a journalist, an American journalist at Everest Base Camp, for example. I mean, I really like the way of life there. I really like I say, respecting the mountain and its rituals. And at the end of the day, none of us Westerners would be able to climb Mount Everest without the Sherpa people. That's the bottom line. And so I defer to the Sherpas a lot for my, you know, how I should be behaving there.
The people of Nepal are some of the warmest, kindest, most incredible people on the planet. I cannot think about my trip to Nepal without just getting a warm feeling all over my body. You know what I mean? They're just so great to be around, and always smiling through so much adversity that they've faced over the years. It's really, I don't really have words for it, but what happened with the earthquake recently and everything is so tragic. It's just a great place. And I totally agree with you. I mean, part of the experience, is being in the country. It's not just the mountain, but it's where the mountain is, right?
Mm-hmm. It really is. It's, I don't want to use the word magical place, but it's an incredibly special place. And, you know, I agree with you, Jason. I take trekkers to Nepal and, you know, the views are great and the mountains are great and the food, but what they really take away is the kindness and gentleness of those people. They never forget that.
Are endurance athletes born or can they be made?
Both. My ability, as it pertains to mountain climbing, my ability to perform at extreme high altitudes is genetic. We are finding more with science that is the case. Absolutely, people that don't have a gift to be able to perform at extreme high altitudes, absolutely they can train and they can get themselves there. But, you know, the doctors that have tested me and the scientists, exercise physiologists and whatnot, have pretty much identified, you know, it's something in my mitochondria, which is a little part of my cell. And the mitochondrial potential, by the way, comes strictly from our mothers. So all of you athletes out there that are listening to this that do have a lot of this maybe genetic gifts for athleticism, and mine is for extreme high altitude, go thank your mothers. Go thank your mothers, because it comes directly from the mother. And I find that interesting, because when I told my mom that, you know, I said, hey, Mom, I want to, my poor mother was laying in the hospice, you know, on the last few days of her life. I said, Mom, I really need to tell you something serious. I want to thank you so much for this genetic gift of being able to perform at extreme high altitudes. And my mom said, Ellen, I find that unbelievable, because I smoked cigarettes the entire time I was pregnant with you.
No way.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just started laughing.
But oh my God.
She got to know before she died that she really was a huge contributor to my climbing success. So
that's a great story. I mean, definitely don't take from this interview that's the right thing to do. No. But no, that's incredible. You have to put that in your next Mother's Day cards too, for everybody listening. You know, thanks for my mitochondria.
That's right.
That's a great story. I wanted to ask you about the mindset shift that somebody needs to take. So my sister just started running like 50Ks and all these big races. You know, then there's like somebody like me who I enjoy the long hike and I'll go on bigger things. But if I'm running, I'm going like 3 to 5 miles, you know, and then I'm just like, OK, that was enough. Like, I don't really want to go any further. Like, how do you get somebody like me into the headspace of being able to go further? Because I feel like at some point, yes, your body, I think, can adapt, but it's the mental struggle. I just feel like I don't have it in me to run 50 kilometers. But then again, I don't want to say that's impossible, because I know people do it. You know, what would you recommend for somebody like me?
It does come down to your brain. It comes down to neuropathways in your brain, Jason. And you just don't have ultra running neuropathways yet. For example, my beginning runners, they come to me and they say, gosh, Ellen, I would love to be able to run a 5K. Say with one of their friends or their kids or whatever, but they don't sense that they're runners. So you know what we do? We start them out one step at a time, very slowly. Maybe my first session with them will be what I call slogging, which is slow jogging. You know, we'll do a little slogging, do a little walking, do a little slogging, and it's not just to get them moving, but it's literally to create a new pathway in their brain for this activity. My most important job as a coach is to make sure that that is a positive pathway. It's something that they're having fun with. It's something that they enjoy. So in other words, if your sister really wants to share her love of ultra running with you and wants to get you into the sport, she'll probably take you out for some longer runs, but she'll make it so uplifting and so much fun that you want to go back for more. What happens after several months is you literally have new pathways in your brain for this activity, where you're not only enjoying it, but you do want to experience it more. So the key here is tiny baby steps. You know, the change experts and the change scientists have let us know that change happens most easily and most effectively with tiny little baby steps. So But you're correct in sensing that when you say I can't get my brain around it, you're exactly right. It's a function of your brain.
So I just have to work harder for a period of time and develop those new pathways. As travelers on the move, I'm sure you found this challenging at some point during your travels. You don't have your routine with your gym and all that type of stuff. What do you recommend as the best way to stay fit? And this can just be pretty general advice across the board, because I know you have things like, tactics like interval training, for example, that maybe you can do some things in more compact time, or, I like to do burpees and body weight exercises and things like that. Do you have a routine or like some kind of top line recommendations for staying fit while you're on the move and you don't have the time to develop routines or going to a place with weights and things like that?
This is going to sound kind of overly simplistic. Keep walking. You know, if you're traveling, one of the best ways to see new villages and new cities and new places, just walk and walk and walk and walk. Do simple things like carry your own weight. Travel with a backpack rather than a suitcase. Keep it on your back, you know? For me, travel has been the most important educator in my life. So you really want to focus on the experiences that you're having, either with people or with different cuisine or different culture. So don't get too obsessed with your fitness regime while you're traveling. Does that make sense? I mean, don't get overly stressed if you didn't get your run in today. I would just encourage the walking, the running, the staying on your feet, and functional movement. Like say you don't have the gym equipment, you've got a backpack that you can lift up and down. You've got, other regular functional, you can do push-ups anywhere. You can do plank anywhere. Those kind of things are super easy to access, but really mostly focus on your travel experience.
It's calming to hear that from an elite athlete to know that, hey, just, soak in your travel experience. That makes me feel good. That's what it's all about.
You got the rest of your life to do freaking sit-ups.
right.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show.
You mentioned travel being one of the great educators in your life. What are some of the things travel has taught you that is maybe something that you don't think you could have learned somewhere else, or, could be really anything along those lines?
For me, there's been different kinds of travel, traveling with friends, traveling alone. I think travel deepens relationships when we travel with friends or with loved ones. I think when we travel alone, it deepens the relationship we have with ourselves. And I want to encourage other women to travel alone, because I think, for example, going to Nepal, if there's a woman out there who really would love to go to Nepal, Nepal is very safe. I've had a lot of women friends. We've all been there on our own many times, because I think the growth and the development, kind of your personal development is invaluable. I have been able, I guess, Jason, to put my life into perspective by what I've learned out in the world. And I wish more Americans would get a passport and get the hell out of this country and see the way that the rest of the world is living, because I think they would come back here and really tone down a lot of the whining and a lot of the complaining and a lot of the pettiness of anxieties that we have here. Once you've seen villagers in the Manaslu region and you see how they live and you see how cheerful they are with, hardly anything, it really, it is impactful, and it's important. It's important for us to understand how other cultures are living in the world.
And it means a lot to hear your perspective and encouraging the females that maybe you want to travel to get out there and do it. And you've found in your experience over many years of traveling that the world is a safe place overall. I mean, it's not something that should deter you being a solo traveling female.
Correct. Correct. Even to, you know, what's interesting is even to places that, you know, we think of Afghanistan or Pakistan as being, you know, I have women friends there that work there. They travel there. They are deeply invested in those countries. They love those countries and those people. It's pretty amazing these days where you can go and what you can do.
That's great. And before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about the Climb for Literacy, because I know you have an event coming up and you live in Vail, Colorado. So if anybody's out there and wants to train with Ellen, you can actually do some, you know, thing one-on-one type of training with her. I'm sure you have other things that you can do. But I know my buddy Joe always raves about the workouts you guys have gone out on with the groups, and she said it's tough to keep up. But you know, you want to share a little bit about kind of what you got going on here coming up with this this charity event?
Well, it's called the Climb for Literacy. It's through the Vail Athletic Club climbing team or Vail Vitality Center, and that's kind of my home base here in Vail. So if anyone comes to Vail, look me up. And it is basically from my blessings, you know, from climbing, it's passing those on to younger people and trying to encourage them to use their passion of climbing to serve other people or to help children less fortunate. So what we do is we climb on the indoor climbing wall, and the kids raise money for each vertical foot they climb. And we raise money for an organization here called the Literacy Project, which serves lower income families and low income kids and kids that struggle learning to read. That's just been a great thing in our community and a great thing for these young climbers. So I love sharing my passion of climbing and my passion of literacy and my passion of helping other people.
I love your message. I love what you're doing. I love your personality. I've had a blast chatting with you today. Before I let you go, I have to ask you, are you retired from climbing, or kind of what's next for you? Any other secret adventures we should know about? Or
Well, I'll always climb mountains. So I'm never going to say I'm retired from climbing, because I'll never be retired from climbing. I think I have come to terms with the fact that, you know, my life above 20,000 feet, 25,000 feet, you know, is probably better for the younger athletes now. I kind of hide behind this excuse that I made up. You know, I think that part of being a good climber is knowing when to stop. I think it is. I mean, I've lost a lot of friends that have kind of kept on pushing. And so I don't know, you know, Jason, I'm pretty spontaneous. So if someone came and gave me a lot of money and said, hey, do you want to go back and climb Mount Everest again? You know what? If the timing was right, I'd probably go. So
just throwing it out there.
Yeah, never say never.
Well, I hope next time I roll through Colorado, maybe we can take a hike or a run together, and I'll be chasing you from behind, trying to find that new neural pathway. What you've accomplished is incredible, and also you've taken your experiences and you're doing so much good with them, and it is really inspiring, and I truly appreciate what you're doing right now, and just you coming here and sharing your story with everybody. It's certainly inspired me in many ways. I know people that are listening are fired up right now, because this is what it's all about. So it's great to hear your perspectives, and thank you again for your time, and hope we can stay in touch.
Yes, we can. Thank you so much, Jason.
Take care. Ellen, thank you so very much for stopping by the show, sharing your time and your story with us. And I just loved sitting down and chatting with you. Hope we cross paths again soon. And my friend, yes, you listening to this show, I want to say thanks for sharing this time here with me. As I always say, this is a community-powered show. So if you want to get in touch, say hello, share your story, suggest some episodes that you'd like to hear, anything, jason@zerototravel.com is my email. And of course, on Zero to Travel, if you're digging this content, I got two things I want to mention and ask. First, I don't ask for reviews very often because I don't want to bug you about it. But if you've been listening to the show and you've just getting a lot of value out of it, and you find that it's been a positive thing in your life, and you're part of this community, then please leave a review if you have a minute. Just 2 minutes. Just jump onto iTunes. You can leave a review right there. And it would be really nice to get some feedback on there and help get the show out there a little bit more to other people. It's trying to help as many people travel the world on their terms. And also, zerototravel.com, sign up. Keep in touch. I've got a lot of unpublished content, stuff that, what I mean by that is stuff that doesn't go out on the podcast here. So whether it's articles, got videos, other free giveaways, all kinds of stuff in the works and currently in existence, go to zerototravel.com, sign up there, and we'll keep in touch off the podcast. And I'll continue to do my best to help you in whatever way I can. This is my purpose, what I'm here to do. I'm excited about this new year, kicking off this new year, living in a new country, doing the whole expat life thing. This is a whole different thing I'll be able to talk about and share with you. I've traveled in so many different ways, and now truly being an expat for an extended period of time is going to be a whole new perspective. And I can't wait to share more of that with you. And all of the other good stuff we have coming up this year, from listener questions episodes, as I mentioned, to more travel mix, travel tactics. I've got multiple interviews already recorded with more inspiring guests giving you their take on everything travel related. It's just awesome stuff. Can't wait to share it with you. So pumped for this year. And this is an open line of communication. So anything you want to hear, just get in touch and let me know. That's it. I am going to let you go now because I'm going to record another episode right now. And I'm going to sign off on this one. And you know what? It's cold in Norway. I haven't seen the sun in days. So yeah, it could get me a little bummed out, but I'm using this weather as good indoor weather to get some good work done on this podcast for you, my friend. So I'm going to go at it again, and I'm going to sign off here. Have a wonderful day. Smile. Take a chance today. If not now, then when? I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.